typically we greet each other with the words Merry Christmas, don't we? Have you ever thought as to why we use that phrase Merry Christmas? What is it that actually makes Christmas merry? If you ask people on the street, why do you think makes Christmas merry? I'm sure you get lots of different reasons. Well, I'm going to ask the children now. Hey, kids, what is it that makes Christmas merry? What makes Christmas special and Christmas merry? Zach?
Celebrating Jesus' birth.
Excellent. Celebrating Jesus' birth. That's number one answer. What else might people say when you ask them, what makes Christmas merry or Christmas special? Liam?
Family time.
Family time. Yeah, great. What other reasons might people say Christmas is merry or special? Cooper? Presents, of course. Did you get some presents this morning? I'm sure you did, yeah. So there's lots of reasons to celebrate Christmas, isn't there? Presents, food, family, and of course the birth of Jesus. Now there are many good reasons that make Christmas special and merry, but the primary reason, first and foremost, that we're here celebrating this morning is indeed the birth of Jesus. But even if you did say that Christmas is all about the birth of Jesus, you won't understand the reason for Christmas if you only focus on Jesus' birth. You won't get the most significant event in human history if you think Christmas is all about angels, wise men, shepherds, and a baby in a manger. And so this morning, we're going to focus on a passage of Scripture that you would normally associate with Christmas. And if you turned up this morning expecting to hear about wise men, shepherds, angels, and a baby in a manger, then I'm sorry, we're not doing that today. You should have come last night, maybe. But I think this encounter, oddly enough, that Jesus has with a man called Zacchaeus helps us to understand the reason for Christmas in a way that's arguably clearer and more pointed than the narrative. The nativity narratives that we so often hear at Christmas time. And so you'll see in your outline there this morning that where we're going with our talk, I want us to see as we look at Luke chapter 19, four things. I want us to see who Jesus is. If we're going to understand the reason for Christmas, we've got to understand who Jesus is. And we need to understand why he came, who did he come for, and how you receive him. Okay? Who's Jesus? Why did he come? Who did he come for, and how do you receive him? Well, if you want to understand Christmas, it starts with understanding who Jesus is. And we get a clue to that in verse 10, the very last sentence in that Bible reading that Pam read for us today on page 58, where Jesus says, "The Son of Man came to seek and save the lost." Now, the Son of Man was Jesus' way of referring to himself. But to understand what this tells us about him, we need to understand the significance of that name. Now, these days, when couples are about to have a baby, inevitably, they will consult one of these, a baby name book, which has thousands of names in it, which help them choose a name for their baby. Now, this is cool names for babies, so this is not the best. So I guarantee good names in here. So, for example, there's a family here at church, Josh and Jackie. They had a baby this week, baby boy, called Harvey. Harvey means battle-worthy. I was talking to Josh, his father, this week, and he's praying that little Harvey will grow up worthy to fight the battle to follow Jesus, which is a fantastic thing to be praying for his little boy. Now, what about other names? Would anyone like me to look up their name here in the battle? And there's this book, Chelsea. Your name's on here, sorry. Not cool. No, to be honest, I didn't write it down. Anyway, all right. Who can I pick on? It's not going to script here. Where's Liam? Little Liam. Do you know what your name means, mate? Means helmet. Did you know that? Not because you have a helmet-shaped head. But because you're brave and you're like a warrior, right? Or what about Cooper? Cooper, do you know what your name means? It means barrel maker. So there might be a bit of brewing there in the future, yeah, maybe. Okay. And Macy, there's Macy's up the back there. Macy, do you know what your name means? Weapon. Is that what Cooper says about you, Macy? You're a weapon in the home? It also means gift from God, which I'm sure is what Dean and Ashley would say about you. Now, if we were to look up Son of Man, we wouldn't find Son of Man in this book. We'd have to go to another book, which is in this book here, the Bible, and in fact a particular book of the Bible in the Old Testament called Daniel. And so in Daniel, we actually get an explanation of what the Son of Man means. And so you see these verses here from Daniel chapter 7, which say, "In my vision at night I looked, and there before me was one like a son of man. Coming into the clouds of heaven, he approached the Ancient of Days, which is God, and he was led into his presence. He was given authority, glory, and sovereign power. All peoples, nations, and men of every language worshipped him. His dominion is an everlasting dominion that will not pass away, and his kingdom is one that will never be destroyed." Now, clearly, this is the image of a king, isn't it? And it's no ordinary king. It's describing a king whose reign is eternal, a king who rules over all people everywhere. The Son of Man, in other words, is the great eternal king, and Jesus is saying, "That's me." You see, Jesus is no ordinary man of history. The baby born in a stable 2,000 years ago was no ordinary baby. He is the great eternal king. Now, clearly, Zacchaeus and the people of Jericho realised that Jesus was a big deal, and so they lined the streets to get a glimpse of Jesus, and Zacchaeus even climbed a tree. But it was only when Zacchaeus got up close and personal with Jesus that he was able to understand that Jesus was much more than just a great teacher or healer. And friends, if you're here this morning and you fail to recognise who Jesus is, that he is the great eternal king, the one who reigns eternally, God's promised king, the one to whom God has given all power and authority to rule over all people and all nations, then the baby in the manger is just a cute story for us to get all sentimental about. You completely miss the significance of Christmas and what God was doing in sending his son to earth, for he's a king with all power and authority. And you need to realise that today, friends. If you don't realise that today, you will realise that when he comes again. Now, for to understand the reason for Christmas, well, we need to understand who Jesus is and why did he come. So he's the great eternal king. But secondly, why did he come? Again, the clue is there in verse 10, that last sentence there, page 58 that we read. "The Son of Man came to seek and save." This great eternal king, the Lord Jesus, came to seek and save. And this is where the gospel, the good news of Jesus, differs from religion. I don't know if you've ever thought about this before. Religion, people who are religious would say, "I'm searching for God." The gospel, the message of Christmas is, Jesus is searching for me. Religion is all about me seeking God. I keep the Ten Commandments and I will find God. I follow this lifestyle, I will find enlightenment. I keep these five pillars, then I will find favour with God. But Jesus says, no, it's the other way around. I've come into the world to seek and save you. That's why he came at Christmas. Jesus Christ came looking for us. And you see this with Zacchaeus, don't we? As Jesus goes along, he sees Zacchaeus, and Zacchaeus doesn't say to Jesus, "Hey, Jesus, can you come to my house today? You're invited." And Jesus looks up at Zacchaeus and says, "Zacchaeus, open up, I'm coming in." The Christmas story is, I've come to look for you. Not that you come to look for Jesus. We weren't even interested in looking for Jesus until he came looking for us. Now, not only does Jesus come to seek after people like you and I, he also comes to save. Jesus came into this world with a purpose. He came with a mission. And unless you understand Jesus was born into this world at Christmas time for this purpose of saving, then Christmas will be totally lost on you. You just won't get it. Again, we see this demonstrated with Zacchaeus. You see, Jesus didn't go to Zacchaeus and say, "Zacchaeus, if you get your life in order, if you do all this stuff, then maybe I'll come and visit you." No, he just says, "I'm coming." And what does Zacchaeus do? Well, he gets down and he welcomes him gladly. And as a result, Jesus says, "Zacchaeus, you are saved. Salvation has come to this house. You are a true son of Abraham, Zacchaeus. No matter what the rest of the country thinks about you, you're a true son. You are saved." And so, friends, if we're going to understand the reason for Christmas, we need to understand who Jesus is. He's the great eternal king. But this king, Jesus, came to seek and save. Lastly, we need to see who he came for. The passage that we see today shows us that Jesus came into the world to save the lost. And as you read this account of Jesus' encounter with Zacchaeus, we see that Zacchaeus is a man who was lost. Now we see two things about Zacchaeus there in verse 2. Firstly, he's the chief tax collector. Secondly, he was very wealthy. Now many of you may know this already, but in case you don't, it's important to understand that a tax collector in Jesus' time was universally despised. Tax collectors were employees of the imperial oppressive Roman government, which had conquered Israel. They'd made the Jews subject to them, and that included imposing heavy taxes on them. Which means, in effect, the Jewish people were paying to finance the armies that were occupying their land and oppressing them. And the men who were responsible for collecting those taxes and passing them on to the Romans were the tax collectors like Zacchaeus. Now, in addition to that, these tax collectors were known for being corrupt and would often skim the profits off the taxes, collect more than they should, and pocket the difference, and which means they were all very rich. Which explains why Zacchaeus was such a wealthy man. He was a crook. And so understandably, men like Zacchaeus were seen as co-conspirators with the Roman government and therefore traitors of the Jewish people. And so they were hated by the people. And we can see this there in verse 7. All the people saw Jesus talking with him, and they muttered. Look, what's a man like this talking to Zacchaeus? He's a scumbag. And yet Jesus deliberately goes to Zacchaeus. A man who was corrupt, a man who was a moral failure, a man who was far away from God and an outcast in all respects. And yet Jesus goes to him and salvation comes to this man Zacchaeus. Before this whole crowd of religious people and morally upright people who look down on their noses at Zacchaeus, and Jesus says, I've come to bring you salvation. Now, when you read through the Gospels, when you read through Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, you see that this pattern is repeated over and over again. It's the outcasts of the world who are constantly attracted to Jesus, that Jesus welcomes, that Jesus connects with, and it's the religious people and the moralists who reject Jesus. What do I mean by outcasts? Well, Jesus comes to the social outcasts, like Zacchaeus, like tax collectors, and the poor, and the foreigners. But he also connects and comes to the moral outcasts, the prostitutes, and the physical outcasts, the lame, the blind, the lepers, all people that were rejected by the social mainstream. They were lost. They were cast out. People rejected by the moral majority, yet these people were attracted to Jesus and Jesus went to them. And the religious people, the ones who were morally upright, they constantly turned their back on him. Why is this? Because unless you realise you're lost, unless you realise that you are a moral failure like Zacchaeus, then you'll never see any need for Jesus. Which means unless you realise you're lost and unless you realise you're a moral failure, you won't understand the reason for Christmas. Jesus Christ came into the world at Christmas to seek and save the lost. And unless you realise that, friends, you'll never share in the salvation that he offers. You see, Christianity is not about being religious or moral. It's about realising you're lost and you need Jesus. You see, religious people reject Jesus because they don't think they need him. They think it's all about following the rules, keeping the commandments, searching for God. Moral people reject Jesus because they think it's all about being good, being better than others. Both the religious person and the moral person therefore think they're okay, they're not lost. How dare you tell me I'm lost? How dare you say I'm morally outcast? I'm a moral failure? But friends, it doesn't matter how religious you are or how moral you are, you and I are all lost without Christ. And you know why? It's impossible for us to do it. Even the most religious person is unable to perfectly obey God with all their heart, soul, mind, and strength and love their neighbours themselves. Even the most morally upright person is unable to live up even to their own standards of morality, let alone God's. How many times have you and I judged someone for doing something and then found ourselves doing exactly the same thing? I do it all the time. J. Just the other day, I was driving my car. I saw a guy on a phone, and I said to myself, get off the phone, you idiot. And yet my kids will tell you, and I'll tell you now, that I do exactly the same thing. We can't even live up to our own standards of morality, let alone God's. And even therefore, by our own standards of morality, we are condemned as moral failures. But friends, the difference between true Christianity and religion and moralism is Christianity says, I'm lost. I'm a failure. I'm an outcast, and I need Jesus to seek me out and save me. Religion and moralism says, I'm okay, I'm better than others, I can do it on my own, I don't need Jesus. And if you and I continue to think that Christmas is good news for the religious person or the morally upright person, then sadly, not only have you completely misunderstood the reason for Jesus coming into the world at Christmas, then you'll be like those people in the crowd at Jericho that Jesus walked straight past. Because you don't realise you're lost. Because you haven't realised why Jesus came into the world in the first place. And until you say, I'm lost, and I desperately need Jesus Christ to come into my life and seek me out and save me, then friends, Christmas will be lost on you this morning. You might have all the fun and the presents and the food and the family, and you might go on a great holiday, but you'll completely miss the significance of what we're doing and why we're celebrating. Now, some of you might be saying, well, that's all pretty depressing for Christmas Day. I thought Christmas was meant to be merry. Where's all the, you know, joy to the world? Where's Harking the Herald and all that stuff? Well, friends, when you realise you're lost, well, Christmas is actually joy. Christmas gives you hope. Christmas is good news. Why? Because as this passage and the message of Christmas shows us, that not only does Jesus Christ want to be in your life, not only does Jesus enjoy coming into the lives of broken and lost people like you and I, when he does come into our lives, he brings salvation. As the angel said to Joseph about Mary in Matthew chapter 1, she will give birth to a son, and you are to give him the name Jesus, because he will save his people from their sins. The Son of Man came to seek and save the lost. Well, how do you get Jesus into your life? Well, it's interesting to see what Zacchaeus did. Zacchaeus, we read in this passage, wanted to see who Jesus was. Now, that's different to Zacchaeus wanting to get a look at Jesus or wanting to see what Jesus looked like. Zacchaeus didn't want to see what Jesus looked like. He wanted to see who Jesus was. And there's a difference there. And Jesus comes to Zacchaeus and says, I'm coming to your house. And then in verse 9, he says, salvation has come to this house. Which shows us that Jesus is salvation. When Jesus comes into your life, salvation comes to those who welcome him. And the fact that Jesus has audacity to say to Zacchaeus, not that salvation will come to this house, not that salvation is coming to this house, that salvation has come to this house, past tense. It's there. Why? Because Jesus is there in the house. Jesus is there with him. Jesus has come into his life. And therefore, friends, being saved is not a matter of being good, following rules, or ticking boxes. You have to know who Jesus is. Because salvation is coming to rest in who Jesus is, the Son of Man, the great eternal King, and what he's done for you. Salvation is not because of what I have done, it's because of what Jesus has done. It's not because of who I am, it's because of who Jesus is. It's not because of my life, it's because of Jesus' life. It's not my works, it's his works. It's not my payment, it's Jesus' payment. That's what Christianity is, friends. And therefore, if you want the salvation he offers, then you've got to see who Jesus is. You've got to get in a position to see him so that you can welcome him when he comes to you. Now, how do you do that? Well, Zacchaeus climbed a tree. You and I need to read the Bible. And so I want to commend to you to this morning, if you're still trying to work out who Jesus is and whether it's worth following him, to take home that essential Jesus that you were given this morning as we came in and that Pam read for you, that tells the story of Jesus' life. You can read it in an hour or two. Why don't you read this Christmas and find out for yourself just who Jesus is, like Zacchaeus did. Now you might be saying, yeah, but is it all worth it? I mean, look at Zacchaeus. He gave away all his money. If I take following Jesus seriously, then I'm going to lose my life. Well, friends, you're right if you discern that. Following Jesus will change your life, but it will be totally worth it. You look at Zacchaeus. He had the money. He had the wealth. He had the financial security. But he was more joyful, more secure, more content without it. But he had Jesus. You might say, well, how can I know? How can I be sure losing my life to Jesus is worth it? Well, because of what it cost Jesus to save lost people like you and I. Jesus Christ was willing to come to this earth for lost people like you and me. The Bible tells us that when Christ went to the cross and paid the price for sin, darkness covered the land. And on the cross, Jesus Christ was willing to get lost in that darkness and bear the punishment of our sin as he went onto the cross and into that darkness. And when he cried out to his Father, my God, why have you forsaken me? In that moment, Christ was separated from his Father. He was lost from his Father. And so the reason you know that following Jesus is totally worth it, putting your trust in him is worth it, is because he was willing to go into the darkness for you and get lost for you. Why would he do that? Because he is wonderfully good and he is more loving than you can ever imagine. And he was willing to do all that in order to seek and save lost people like you and I. And so if Jesus lost his life for you, then you can know it'll be worth losing your life for him. Friends, the reason for Christmas, the reason we celebrate, it's not because of food or family or holidays or presents. It's because we're lost. And yet the Son of Man came to seek and save that was lost. And that's the reason we celebrate today. And my prayer is that for all of you, as you celebrate Christmas this day, that you will do it as a person who knows that you were lost, but in Christ you've been found. So Merry Christmas. Let me pray.